Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Ted Lasso was at the White House yesterday. A big Ted Lasso fan, the Apple TV show. For those of you who are not familiar, Jason Sudeikis, I think, created this and plays Lasso, who is a sort of a goofball American who is hired, goes to London, is hired to coach one of the premier soccer teams, totally screws it up. And there's this whole culture clash that's always going on. But the reason for the mental health angle is that his character, and all the other frontline stars were there as well, he is getting therapy from the team psychologist, dealing with depression. His son is back in Kansas. And that has made him more of a real person, I think. As opposed to somebody just playing everything for laughs. So what Jason Sudeikis said at the White House is, we all have to know that we shouldn't be afraid to ask for help ourselves. And that does take a lot, especially when it's something that has such a negative stigma to it, such as mental health. And that doesn't need to be that way. Now, is this a case of, you know, using a celebrity to push a certain issue? Sure. But what's the harm? What's the big deal? It's not like the briefings are so fascinating on days when Jason Sudeikis doesn't show up. Rupert Murdoch, 92 years old, is getting married again. The story is in the New York Post, which of course is owned by Rupert. He got the bride an Asher-cut diamond solitaire. Having never bought one of those, I have no commentary to add. Murdoch quote is saying, "I was very nervous. I dreaded falling in love, but I knew this would be my last. It better be. I'm happy." He is marrying Anne Leslie Smith, who's 26 years younger. And she's quoted as saying, "For both of us, it's a gift from God. We met last September. I'm a widow, 14 years. Like Rupert, my husband was a businessman, worked for local papers, developed radio and TV stations, and helped promote Univision. So I speak Rupert's language. We share the same beliefs." And Murdoch said, "We're both looking forward to spending the second half of our lives together." Getting married this summer, this is about a year after Murdoch's divorce from his third wife, Jerry Hall. They were married for 6 years. So before I start the first story, I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage here. I've delayed recording this podcast thinking maybe Donald Trump was right. Maybe today, Tuesday, is the day that he's going to be arrested and indicted. Early indications are suggesting to me that I don't think so. I don't think that today is the day. Trump just sort of made up Tuesday. I think it's more likely to be tomorrow when the grand jury is scheduled to meet again. So if Trump does get arrested, you know, it kind of wipes out, or at least obviously dates, everything I'm saying here. But we have deadlines in this business, and so I want to get into it. Story number one. Let me start with the reaction of Ron DeSantis to the pending indictment, according to Trump, and no reason to believe that that's not true, of the former president. Because DeSantis, you know, all the other Republican candidates, would-be candidates, Kevin McCarthy calling this an abuse of power by Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, they're all lining up behind Trump. That was what he did, what he accomplished by seizing control of the narrative with that Truth Social post over the weekend. He's got the Republican Party speaking out, not necessarily endorsing him for president, but saying that this is outrageous. We'll come back to that. But what was Ron DeSantis going to do? Because he has made a practice, and in fact was reported to be under pressure from Trump people, to say something. So here's his response. The Florida governor saying, "I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star or to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that." Isn't that interesting? That's just the first part. So it's like, you know, I just don't have any expertise in paying off porn stars. I don't know about paying off porn stars or sleeping with porn stars or buying their silence. So I can't talk about porn stars and Donald Trump. It never occurred to me to do something like that. In other words, he gets it in play. He mentions it while in the process of disavowing any comment. All right, but he goes on to say, what I can speak to is you have a prosecutor who is ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction, and he chooses to go back many, many years ago to try to use something about porn star hush money, in case you lost the thread there, payments. You know, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda. So DeSantis feels perfectly comfortable attacking Alvin Bragg, who has been, I mean, he's sort of the perfect target for Trump, elected Democrat, black, and has followed a policy many have been very critical of not going after a lot of people who break the law in Manhattan, in his jurisdiction. So he can easily be characterized as a radical left, or, you know, his defenders would say caricatured as a radical left Democrat. Also, he passed up on this case a year ago. Two prosecutors quit. Why is he bringing it now? It does make it smell political. But now I want to share with you Donald Trump's reaction. I'm not positive whether this is just before the DeSantis statement or not. But listen to this, and I've talked about this before, and some of you who follow these things closely will recognize it. Ron DeSanctimonious will probably find out about false accusations and fake stories, all caps, sometime in the future as he gets older, wiser, and better known. When he's unfairly and illegally attacked by a woman, even classmates that are, quote, underage, and then there's a parentheses, or possibly a man, exclamation point, I'm sure he will want to fight these misfits just like I do. And there is a picture that he has posted before of a young Ron DeSantis who spent a year teaching at a high school in Georgia with like three young girls or women there whose faces are blurred out. Now, first of all, to bring this up again, there's never been even an allegation, a suggestion, a rumor that Ron DeSantis, when he was in his early 20s, when he was a teacher, had any relationship with any student. Nobody has said that. The New York Times has reported and talked about this, you know, that he was friendly with students and he attended a party where there was liquor. I'm sorry, big effing deal. But adding here, and in that original post, Trump said that he was grooming these women. I mean, this is so far out of bounds, so unfair, so attached to nothing, that it does provide a reminder of what it's like to run against Donald Trump. And that's what probably Ron DeSantis will find out. But classmates that are underage, all right, so at worst, because the Times story said there was one black woman quoted as saying she thought he was condescending to black people. Okay, but that's not what this is about. This is about the sexual part. Underage, so if he was at a drinking party with women or girls who were not yet 18, maybe not the wisest choice, but, and then he adds, or possibly a man. So now he's raising questions about DeSantis' sexuality. It just boggles the mind. So at the time when Trump first did this, DeSantis' response was, I don't spend my time trying to smear other Republicans. On Fox last night, Jesse Waters delivered these remarks saying, you settle a case like this, if he's running for president or not, just to protect your family and your reputation. Bragg's under pressure because he's running out of the statute of limitations on the federal side. He goes on to say, you have a misdemeanor that they're Frankensteining into a felony case with a campaign finance violation. And the guy wants to make a name for himself, obviously, because he wants to be the Trumpster. I'm going to be the first prosecutor to throw cuffs on Trump. That'll get you elected pretty much governor in the state of New York. That's what he's after. Also, Trump's now rising ahead of DeSantis in a lot of these polls. A lot of people are terrified of him because if he does become president again, he wants to make peace in Ukraine. He wants to get Jerome Powell out of there as Fed chair. He wants to close the border down. He's a big threat. Interesting, because there are conflicting views on this in this sense. It is felt that a lot of people, Democrats, let's say, or anti-Trumpsters, or just ordinary voters who Trump has managed to alienate over the years, actually would like him to be the Republican nominee because of the feeling it'd be easier for President Biden to beat. A few years younger, but still old. Not Ron DeSantis, who's 44. Got all the baggage, you know, you name it, January 6th and so forth. And there seems to be, there's a couple of things happening in the media here, which I find interesting. A whole lot of people, I got into this a little bit yesterday, are ripping the Stormy Daniels case. And I've been critical of it too, because it involves something that happened 6 years ago. It's not a good look. I mean, if you just were writing a movie and you had a presidential candidate or a former president, you would say that, you know, writing a check to reimburse your since indicted lawyer, $430,000 hush money payment to a porn star, probably would maybe even be disqualifying for this imaginary candidate. But when you look at all the things that Donald Trump is under investigation for, making phone calls to Georgia officials to try to find 11,780 votes, mishandling of classified documents and possibly obstructing there. These are the accusations. Inciting the violence that occurred in the Capitol riot. You can debate every one of these, but these are weighty issues. It's not payments to a porn star over an alleged one-night sexual encounter, which he denies, which happened 17 years ago. I don't think people think it's important. I think a lot of journalists are saying this is fairly trivial. It does look political on Alvin Bragg's part. And he may not even get a conviction because it's not the strongest case. This whole business about bumping it up to a felony, you know, only takes one juror to dissent and then there's a mistrial. Bumping it up to a felony, that's the part that seems to be the stretch. So the now conventional wisdom in the media, this is part two, is that this helps Trump. In the short term, maybe. The MAGA base who thinks that he is a victim of deep state persecution, which he himself is laying out. And look, he's attacking Alvin Bragg, but he also attacked Bob Mueller. He also attacked judges who've ruled against him. This is how he rolls. But still, this may be a bad idea. And the latest on the mechanics of it is that yesterday the last witness appeared before the Manhattan grand jury. The guy, Robert Costello, who dealt with Michael Cohen at the time, was there as a pro-Trump witness, challenging Cohen's credibility and saying, this is not the way it happened. I was there. I just saw a little clip of him on TV. So I think for Bragg to bring a grand jury indictment against Trump today would make it look like, well, that was just an afterthought. We have this other witness. At least maybe he shows that he's thought about it for a day. And I think it will probably be this week, unless Bragg is getting cold feet, unless maybe he decides he's not going to bring this case. But all indications are to the contrary.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in freefall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Let's move on to story number two. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, not a big Trump fan, but a lifelong conservative, I guess is reading Trump's Truth Social posts as closely as I am. you know, it's not Twitter, although he could go, he could now take the things he writes on True Social, wait 6 hours or 8 hours and put them on Twitter. He hasn't done it yet. He said, hi, I'm back on Facebook. And he also can get back on YouTube, or is back on YouTube. He hasn't made anything, but he has the right to be on YouTube. Okay, so Lowry writes a lot about the stuff that Trump is writing about, some of which gets ignored by the media. You know, there he goes again. Some of which does get coverage. Lowry says Trump is, by any measure, the front runner. He leads in every poll. One poll last week had him ahead by 40 points in New Hampshire. Yet Trump is like no front runner we've ever seen, not necessarily in his strength or in his weakness, but in his manifest insecurity. Front runners usually try to glide above the rest of the field, seeking to reinforce their dominant status by their lack of engagement with the also-rans. Following Trump's account, you'd think Ron DeSantis was running away with it. And an envious and obsessed Trump was trying to figure out some way, anyway, to begin to close a 20-point gap. Either that, or you might figure Trump was simply having some sort of personal meltdown. For example, he gives, he can't abide the stories about DeSantis' new best-selling book, so that, which is called The Courage to be Free, if you're interested in. So he went into a whole rant about, you know, there must be bulk sales involved. You can't be selling that many books. He reduces, again, this is from National Review, he reduces DeSantis' governing success, built on a couple of decades of Republican political effort in the state, to pleasant weather. Florida was going great for many years, long before Ron DeSantis got there. The sunshine and ocean are wonderful things to have, says the Florida resident. And then DeSantis inevitably is a rhino and a globalist. His associations are sort of like, are you now or have you ever been a friend of Paul Ryan? So now Trump says we have Jeb, rhino Paul Ryan, Marxist George Soros wanting Ron DeSantis. Does that tell you anything? And then Rich says the Soros remark has been distorted. In any event, Trump is happy to recycle any Democratic demagogy as long as it's a convenient tool against DeSantis, especially on entitlements. And he goes into DeSantis as a former congressman voting to cut Social Security and Medicare. I mean, that's a completely legitimate issue. The press, I think, needs to provide the context. Was this a bipartisan compromise at the time? But, you know, Trump just obviously will use anything against him. From the thing I read earlier about the underage girls to something more substantive, such as whether he would vote to cut Medicare and Social Security. And Rich wraps this column by saying it's better for a front-running candidate to be vigilant about potential threats, but being in a near panic, advertising ill will, pettiness, and extreme defensiveness is another matter. So Lowry himself is a little spun up because his second column today saying, what if Trump wins the presidency again? What if he wins the Electoral College and loses the popular vote? It will be considered a damning indictment of our constitutional system. Progressives will deny the legitimacy of his victory. There will be large-scale street protests. Noting that Trump said in that famous, I guess it was the speech to CPAC, I am your retribution. And Rich says the revenge tour isn't a new thing, by the way. During his first term, Trump demanded the arrest of his enemies, as I well remember. Why would a second term be any different, especially given that he's angrier and more aggrieved than a few years ago? And then he goes on to say that what will change is the administration will be stocked with officials more likely to act on Trump's worst instincts and half-baked ideas than the first time around. You know, the first time around, you had Jim Mattis, you had Rex Tillerson, you had different people who would try to talk Trump out of things. But many of those type of people will not want to join a second Trump administration because they, you know, look at what happened to the reputations of a lot of people who worked for them the last time. Of course, the wilder Trump administration gets, the crazier the opposition becomes, and vice versa. It will be an endless cycle of chaos and drama. Okay, maybe. But Lowry also says that Bragg is being wildly irresponsible by bringing or contemplating bringing this indictment. Now, here's something else that happened that I find kind of chilling. House Republicans, we're talking here about a letter from Jim Jordan, James Comer, the new oversight chairman, and Brian Steele of Wisconsin. They are asking for testimony and documents from Alvin Bragg, describing this as a politically motivated prosecutorial decision, which, by the way, he hasn't made yet. Or maybe he's made it, but it hasn't been made public. So Donald Trump, as president, used to say, you know, Barack Obama and Joe Biden spied on me. They should be arrested. And that was a pretty, you know, but he did it all sort of out in the open. I mean, he did some of it privately, too. But he never did this. Asking a prosecutor, and you know, I've made myself clear about the case, but asking a prosecutor, even before an indictment is brought, but it doesn't really matter, to provide documents and testify about an ongoing criminal investigation. And if they ask this the day after Trump gets indicted, still, it's an ongoing criminal investigation. Now, once a criminal matter is resolved one way or the other, there's a conviction, there's acquittal, whatever, then I think it's okay for the Congress to exercise oversight. But to do it in the midst of this would lead to an endless cycle of every time a federal or state prosecutor brings a case, somebody tries to put that person on trial. That's not the way our system is supposed to work. I know I've said this many times. I covered the Justice Department years ago. I know all the ins and outs about criminal investigations. You can't ask the prosecutor to come testify, and I'm sure there'll be a big battle over this. One more note here. Trump's lead attorney, Joe Tacopina, who made the media rounds recently defending his client, he had a very different view of this in 2018. I think this was dug up by CNN. Talking about the Stormy case, Tacopina said, for any prosecutor to say a lawyer took out a home equity loan with his own money, paid somebody that he didn't even know on behalf of a client who, by the way, had the wherewithal and the money to afford $130,000, and by the way, didn't tell the client about the settlement agreement. It's an illegal agreement. It's a fraud, if that's in fact the case. Doesn't pass the straight face test. But look, lawyers will represent anybody and take any position. So he was criticizing this as a fraud when he was just a private attorney, had no involvement. Now he's been hired to represent the former president, and this came out. Now, are you sick of hearing about Donald Trump? Tough, because I have one more brief item. Look, I mean, if Joe Biden would make more news, I would devote more time to it. And sometimes he makes news with policies that he's enacting or proposing or pushing or contemplating. But, you know, you look at the White House, and it's kind of always been this way. There's not the, you know, Biden himself rarely talks to journalists. He's low-key. He doesn't have a fiery Twitter account. And there's not a lot of this, well, this person leaked this against this other person in the White House to get revenge. It's a pretty cohesive team. But it leaves, I mean, Kevin Cork, who covers the White House for Fox News, said on my show Sunday, you know, the reporters are kind of bored with Biden. And you can see it's just a completely different style. Not just in Donald Trump, but a different style in Bill Clinton, different style than Obama, different style than George W. Bush. I mean, that's what Biden's comfortable with. But it often makes him seem sort of out of the action. You know, I mean, he leaves it to Corrine to field these questions. And I'm not saying it's the role of the president to pop off on everything like, you know, the Oscars and NFL kneeling and all that sort of thing. But he's got a giant bully pulpit, and, you know, he gives these set speeches that are fine, but it just seems, Biden just often seems like a bystander. I don't know how else to put it. Maybe that's what people want. Maybe that's what people voted for in 2020, and into the chaos. Well, they're going to have another chance to decide on President Biden next year. Anyway, story number three. Trump's lawyers have filed a motion in Georgia trying to quash the release of a final report of this special grand jury that investigated whether he broke the law by calling Brad Raffensperger, I need you to find me the votes, by calling the late Republican Speaker of the House, you need to convene a special session. The motion seeks to preclude the use of any evidence derived from the special grand jury investigation, claiming it was conducted under an unconstitutional statute and through an illegal and unconstitutional process that violated Trump's due process rights. This comes as the DA in Fulton County, which is Atlanta, Fannie Willis, is expected to announce in the coming weeks whether she'll file charges or not. In January, she told a judge that charging decisions in the case are imminent. Well, that's how the criminal justice system works. It's now the end of March. So the filing goes on. It's 483 pages, saying the process was unfair. Look, when you don't have the facts on your side, you argue process. And I would think that the effort here to have the grand jury findings thrown out, never made public, is probably the longest of long shots. But now I'm done with Trump.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Okay, story number four. New York Times has a piece on CNN, in part about its lousy ratings. The piece begins by saying that Chris Licht debuted a novel experiment last month. You probably don't even know about this. To revive his network's flagging primetime ratings. Betting that viewers would tune in for a mix of exclusive interviews and specials dedicated to hot-button topics like fentanyl abuse and the war in Ukraine. Viewers have had other ideas. At 9 p.m. on March 8th, for instance, more Americans watched Homicide Hunter, The Man with No Face on the Investigation Discovery cable network, than CNN's exclusive interview with Vladimir Zelensky. 2 days earlier, an afternoon broadcast of Ancient Aliens on the History Channel, I missed that one, drew a bigger audience than a 9 p.m. interview with First Lady Jill Biden. Last week, when the network aired the Biden and Zelensky interviews, as well as a town hall with Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, CNN delivered its fourth lowest 9 p.m. weekly ratings in 24 years. I mean, the bottom has just dropped out in terms of the ratings that CNN is delivering in total day, but especially in prime time. CNN spokesman says, look, we've been openly experimenting with a variety of programming directions over the past few weeks. Without an established format, cadence, or promotion for that hour, the network is focused exclusively on producing smart and meaningful content, not on ratings. I think this was at the Gridiron Dinner, you know, where everybody roasts everybody else. And Secretary of State Tony Blinken was at the mic, and he said, according to the guest list, there are 600 attendees here tonight. CNN would kill for an audience like that. But look, I do think it's worthwhile for CNN, from a news point of view, to be talking to the president of Ukraine and the first lady. And basically, this feels like a stopgap because Chris Licht has not been able to find a big name, a big personality to replace the hour that had been hosted by Chris Cuomo at 9 p.m. Eastern. And so, you know, they can send people out, and obviously Licht has gotten a vote of confidence from the Warner Brothers Discovery chairman, Zaz. I just think people tune in to watch the host, to watch the anchor. And having a rotating set of shows where you don't really know in advance what's on, and you're not, you know, it's not appointment TV because, you know, whether you watch MSNBC and you love Nicole Wallace or Rachel Maddow, who's only once a week, or Morning Joe, you know when they're on and you watch or don't watch according to your preferences. The CNN Morning Show, by the way, has also been kind of a disaster with Don Lemon, who had to apologize for that crack about women being in their prime and other things. And if you like Fox, then you know when Jesse Waters is on or Tucker or the Morning Show people, Bill Hemmer or Outnumbered or Media Buzz, 11 a.m. Eastern on Sundays. And you tune in to watch. I mean, every show is different, obviously, and some shows have rotating casts of characters, but, you know, so I just think this is not going to work, and Licht has to find somebody. And, you know, because CNN is repositioning itself as not an advocacy network, in other words, as the top officials acknowledge, you know, it kind of ruined its reputation by spending 6 years bashing Donald Trump. That's what it was. It was trying to outflank MSNBC on the left. Well, that worked for a while, but it doesn't work now. Although the comeback of Trump is a news story, you know, the possible indictment and all the other stuff that's going on with DeSantis, you would think would really help CNN's ratings. But that doesn't appear to be the case. If the New York Times is writing about it, you got a problem. All right, number five. Howard Stern has endorsed a candidate for president. And that person is Jon Stewart. Apparently Stern had been on vacation and watched a lot of Jon Stewart's Apple TV show, where, you know, he interviews significant people. I mean, Stewart has developed a more serious side, which he leavens with his jokes. And of course, you know, 16 years on The Daily Show. So Howard tells his audience that when Jon Stewart hosted The Daily Show, they said he was the most trusted newsman in the country, like Walter Cronkite trustworthy. Well, you know, I wrote this in one of my books, which is that Jon Stewart kind of revolutionized TV, at least news programs, by doing a sort of a no BS thing, obviously leaning to the left, but, you know, gathering old clips to contradict or challenge what politicians were saying. And then, you know, ridiculing him with his trademark style. And sometimes he got really angry, and that could work. So Stern tells his co-host Robin Quivers, the guy is so effing smart and bright and also witty and really measured when he takes on a debate. And he says, you know, he would work his ass off to be a good president. And I'm telling you, he could also win because people like Jon Stewart. Well, not everybody does, but, you know, certainly, you know, remember when Jon Stewart, you know, he's not just a captive of the left. Remember when he went on, this came up again, when the FBI said it was leaning toward the COVID originated in the Wuhan lab. Remember when he went on his buddy Stephen Colbert's show and said, where could this have come from? I know, why don't we ask the Wuhan coronavirus laboratory in China? And then he recently, you know, brought that up again, obviously, when it looked like more people were going to his position. Also, I think Stern would have made a strong case, maybe he just didn't know about this. I mean, where Jon Stewart really demonstrated his political chops was he, I think, more than any single person, was responsible for the passage on a bipartisan basis by embarrassing Republican governors, lawmakers, who had changed their position. This bill had been kicking around for years to give aid to veterans who were affected by being exposed to toxic burn pits and toxic chemicals. Finally, these people who fought for our country and were exposed to these conditions are going to get the medical attention and the financial aid that they need. I mean, President Biden deserves credit for pushing it through, but there was a time when it was stuck. And Jon Stewart just did a whole round of interviews and he embarrassed the S out of the ones who had changed their minds, and it got through. So that's actually an accomplishment, more of an accomplishment than many congressmen can point to. Stern says he owes it to his country to run. Well, this sort of came up last year. Politico column floated him as a potential candidate. And on Twitter, Jon Stewart said last year, no, thank you. You know, when you take a step back, it's hard to imagine a guy who's been a professional comedian, who's, you know, dealt with some raunchy stuff and so forth, winning the presidency or even deciding it was a good idea to run for the presidency. But I guess a lot of people are thinking, you know, he's going to run again. It's going to be, I mean, what nomination is he going to get? He's going to run as an independent. It's going to be Trump, Biden, and Jon Stewart. I mean, he would liven things up. I mean, from a media point of view, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see him in the debates. you know, I don't agree with Jon Stewart about lots of things, but he's quick on his feet. I've interviewed him. I know the story. Anyway, that's not going to happen. but I thought it was worth sharing with you. Thanks you for sharing this time with me. If you'd like to subscribe to our podcast and you're not already doing so, Amazon Music is a way you can do it and get it without the ads. And we will be back here tomorrow. I hope to see you then, or at least you can hear my voice with more Buzzbeater. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.